You're listening to The Zeitcast, a podcast with Jonathan Martin that aims to speak to the spirit of the moment we're in. Thank you for joining us today. Good to be back with you. This is Joel. We are thrilled to bring you this special episode of the Zeitcast, which features a sermon that Jonathan gave this past Sunday on Instagram Live during the Table OKC's Sunday morning service. The sermon just felt so special. Some unique measure of grace was upon that day, and we felt that we had to share it with you. In this sermon, Jonathan pulls from the lectionary text, utilizing both the reading from the Jewish scriptures as well as the gospel text. He describes how so many of us are feeling, so many of us who feel that even our ability to dream and imagine a better day is under attack. Our ability to hope feels restricted, confined, and maybe even held captive. Jonathan poetically and tenderly invites the Holy Spirit to liberate those places, and that we would feel infused by hope, that we would dream the dreams that God has given us. So friends, this is a special day. I know that you will enjoy this just as much as I did, and wherever you are, we want to say thank you. Thank you for being with us. Thank you for being part of this special Zeitcast community. Thank you for your support in every way that you support us, whether it's on social media platforms, sharing the podcast, sharing the episodes, liking, rating, reviewing. All of those things help, and we couldn't do this without you. So without further ado, here is the table service with Jonathan Martin. Friends, welcome back to the Zeitcast.
These readings today, and as it often happens with the lectionary, kind of being led to a place where I wouldn't otherwise choose to go, but it feels very right this morning. And I want to speak very specifically this morning to people who may find themselves in a place like Peter, who finds himself drowning, he's beginning to sink, and who's in that place of desperation, and he's crying out, "Save me!" But I also want to speak to this other moment. And in just a moment, I'm going to pray for just like maybe 20 seconds, if even that. But just before we do, I just want to bring this one verse to your attention. In our New Testament reading, we have Peter who's sinking. Peter, who's experiencing the sensation of drowning, crying out for Jesus to save him. But in our Old Testament reading, in Genesis 37, we have Joseph, who's left in another dire place. With that text, it does not end with the rescue. It does not end with salvation. We have Joseph being thrown into a pit, sold out by his brothers. And there's this one phrase in particular I want to highlight, and I'm just curious this morning as to what this might stir in you, because it stirred up something in me. Genesis 37, verse 19, when his brothers are conspiring against him, they said to one another, "Here comes this dreamer. Come now, let us kill him. Let us throw him into one of the pits. Then we shall say that a wild animal has devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams." What does that stir in you? "We shall see what shall become of his dreams." Sit with that for just a moment. And let's pause just a moment to breathe, to pray. And God, for anybody this morning who feels themselves at the bottom of a pit, for anybody this morning who feels the sensation of drowning, lungs filling with water, less and less oxygen, who feels this morning like time is running out, who feels this morning like surrounded on all sides, for everything out of control, we ask this morning that you would come, that you would redeem, that you would rescue, and that we would recognize you in whatever form that you would want to take today. In the name of the Christ, we pray. Amen. So I've been thinking the last few days about Joseph, the dreamer. And, you know, we had Carl Mendoza on a few weeks ago, our dear friend, who very literally a dreamer in terms of the dream act. And, you know, I hope this doesn't dash anybody's hopes and dreams here. Since we're reading from the NRSV this morning, we have this phrase that Joseph, of course, was wearing a long robe with sleeves, which I know is different from those of us who grew up with the King James and Joseph's coat of many colors. The phrase in Hebrew is actually a little bit ambiguous. Not to say that it couldn't have been colorful, but that's a little bit unclear. The idea is that he's wearing a long sleeve robe. It may have, in fact, been, the idea is probably something more like it was richly ornamented. The idea really is that the robe was not intended for working. This is not a common robe. This is not the kind of robe you'd wear out in the field. It was textured. And it, you know, there was a whole design to it. So whether or not it had a whole lot of colors, it was definitely a distinctive robe that looked different from everybody else's robe. It was different from his brother's robes. And so the idea is that his brothers are suspicious that because this robe was textured, because this robe was set apart, that what it meant was that ultimately that they would act, that his father would actually pass along the empire, would actually pass along his little kingdom along to him, as opposed to his other brother. So they grow up jealous of him. And just this sort of malice, the vindictiveness here. Here comes this dreamer. We're going to throw him in the pit. We'll see that, we'll make it look like a wild animal is going to devour him. We shall see what will become of his dreams. You know, I always feel like it's really important not to assign intent in terms of whatever it is that's kind of coming at us. But I feel like it in a time like this one in particular, we see so much meanness in the world right now. And especially as we continue to see just the staggering kind of racism around us. Watching this video the other day of this black family in Aurora, Colorado. I mean, absolutely heartbreaking. This family of six, and you've got a six-year-old girl out on the ground. I mean, just in general, I'm always struck by the sheer, I don't know, just the kind of malice and vindictiveness that seems to be in the air right now. Whether or not, whatever you do with a concept like spiritual warfare, I think you have to acknowledge that there's some sort of resistance, that there seems to be some kind of evil at work in the world that's greater than some of its parts, that human beings are capable of incredible cruelty towards each other, vindictiveness, malice, hate, rage. And the fact of the matter is, it's not an easy time to be a dreamer. It's not. It's not an easy time to be a dreamer. And I think if you live long enough, then you have the experience of having dreams that are distinctive, of having a robe that is particular to you, that has its own textures, that has its own color, that has its own design. And here's the thing, the very thing about you that makes you you, the very thing about you that makes you special, the very thing about you that makes you particular, the very thing about you that makes you who you are, the thing that ought to make you cherished, the thing that ought to make the people around you treasure you, the thing that you would think would make people around you like that they would celebrate, becomes the very reason that somebody in your life wants to throw you in a pit. So instead of people seeing this thing about you that's distinct, instead of people seeing this thing about you that's unique, instead of them honoring that in some way, it's that thing about you that's particular that becomes a threat. We have no sign in this text, at least, of Joseph being arrogant to his brothers. He hasn't done anything, but his father has favored him in this way. And this robe that is a symbol of his father's favor is perceived as a threat by his brothers for no other reason, except it's for them, it's like this, it's kind of this ornamental sign of the way that his father celebrates him. Other people perceive as a threat. I feel like I hear this story day in and day out of people who have particular gifts, particular unction. Quite honestly, I feel like this is true of all kinds of people, and maybe most people at some point in their life, but I feel like it's actually especially true for women, that whatever gift that it is that you have, whatever it is that's inside of you, if you have like a big gift, how common is that? That if you're a woman who has a particular gift, that gift inside of you, that if a man were to walk in that kind of gift, that would be perceived as being bold. You're told that you're mouthy. If a man would have that, it would be told that they were like, that they're courageous. You're told that you're being brassy. I had someone who's kind of had a pastoral kind of relationship over the years before, kind of reach out in this way. He's in seminary now. He's kind of coming up against these things, like where the very things that make her unique, the very things that make her particular, kind of getting used and leveraged against her. And I see that happen all the time, that whatever it is that makes you unique in some way, that somebody else will perceive it as some kind of a threat. And it's in a way, it seems hard to imagine that something that it is inside of you, that something's inside of someone else as a dream, something that's beautiful, something that's good, something that's God-given. A dream of prospering, and I'm not talking about material prospering, I'm talking about flourishing. A dream of flourishing, a dream of becoming, a dream of, and I just saw Don commented, my four, Enneagram four heart needs to hear this. Fours, y'all need to know. I know you'll get written off for the need to be unique or whatever. You know what? Everybody has a need on some level to be particular. And God does give us particular gifts that need to be born out into the world. And I got news for you. Actually, almost everything that good that almost any of us do, I think, is born out of insecurity on some level. It's what drives us. And that doesn't make us wicked or evil. This cocktail that we have of insecurity and of beauty, the gifts that we have, the weakness that we have, the fragility that we have, all kind of conspires together to be part of the way that God has wired us to be good and to be beautiful. But man, like when that rubs someone else the wrong way, and whatever treasure God has placed inside of us, someone else perceives that to be a threat. I just did read it one more time. Here comes this dreamer. But they said they're going to throw Joseph into the pit, and we'll see what will become of his dreams. A lot of you are having this experience right now where dreams are being thwarted, and maybe it's not quite playing out quite so violently as being thrown into a pit, but it feels like that. feels like being in a deep, dark place where you feel alone, where you feel isolated, where you don't feel like you've got that kind of support system around you. Look at Joseph's case here. You know, like his brothers, the people around him that he would have hoped maybe would be the people who would encourage him both. And I want to be careful how to say this, because we need to be very suspicious, right, of our own tendencies towards self-righteousness, you know, and to set ourselves over against people in an unhealthy way, because I don't mean to sound like that. But please understand, I do think sometimes that we have this expectation or this sense that certain people around us are going to help us to fulfill things that God has placed inside us to do, but that may just not be in what's in the cards, right? Like, God is going to fulfill God's purposes in Joseph's lives. And ultimately, we're going to have this beautiful reconciliation between Joseph and his brothers. You know, it's not going to be that Joseph's going to spend his life trying to prove something to them. God's never in that. God's never in striving. God's never in this kind of like, I'm going to show them. In fact, Joseph will be an agent of great blessing and peace and reconciliation to his brother. So it's not going to be like that. But, and this is important, we can't live contingent. And I think what happens a lot of times is when people are kind of thrown into the theoretical pit, and when people write you off and they perceive your gifts as threat, and they perceive your dreams as an indictment on them, maybe because they're not dreamers and because they don't have this same kind of gift. And that's often not because they're evil people, but because life has beat them down in the same way, that they also have kind of felt thrown into a pit of sorts, because, you know, their own dreams have kind of been beaten out of them. So, like, you know, so when that happens, you can't waste your life. You can't spend all your energy waiting for those folks to come around, hoping that sometime, someplace, somewhere, that they're going to help you somehow fulfill this thing that God has placed inside of you to do. That may not be what God intends. That may not be. There may be a particular way that God is going to come to the rescue that's just not about them. So we have to stop looking sometimes for some of these folks to come to the rescue. I know that God actually does use one of Joseph's brothers here, but we have to just stop looking in that direction. Look to God to be our redeemer and our rescuer. And thanks for preaching with me, Michelle and Jackie. I'm glad you did this morning. But tell you what, I hope this doesn't feel too disconnected, but I do want to speak at least briefly to both of these texts, though, because, you know, the Old Testament reading, we know who've skipped to the end of the story, that Joseph is going to experience a rescue, that he is going to experience redemption. But we don't get that within this text. It ends on a bit of a cliffhanger with him being in the pit with no one coming to his help or to his rescue. And then in our gospel text, we have a different kind of calamity. We have a different kind of disaster. We have the story of the disciples in the midst of a storm. So two different settings, two different kinds of crises, one being in the bottom of the pit, one being in the middle of the storm, where the disciples are battered by, as there's being battered by the waves, we have this moment. I just want to focus our attention here for just a moment, where as the disciples see Jesus walking on the sea, they're terrified and they say it is a ghost, and they cry out in fear. And specifically, where I'm just seeing a connection between these texts this morning is that I think, like, if you've been in the bottom of the pit long enough, if you've been in the middle of the storm long enough, if the storm has been raging, if you have been kind of laying at the bottom of the well, and redemption has not come, the trauma of that is very real. And what happens in the midst of a moment like that is that our response becomes conditioned in such a way to where even when God does come to rescue us, and this feels important to me right now, even when God does come to redeem, even when God does show up, what's the first response? The disciples don't recognize Jesus as Jesus. Their first response is, it's a ghost. They don't say, praise God, our redemption has come. No, they cry out in fear. They shriek in terror because the one that's actually come to redeem them, the one that's actually come to save them from this very real, very particular situation, they think has come simply to terrorize them further. And so, and I want to say this in a very tender way because it speaks to my experience as much as anybody else's. There's no condemnation here. But I think especially after you've been beat down enough, and I think especially dreamers, when your dream has been beat down enough, I just wonder how often that God comes in a form that we do not recognize, and God comes to redeem, God comes to rescue, but precisely because at this point we're expecting a violent response to our dreams. We're expecting malice. We're expecting resistance. We're expecting somebody to be vindictive. We're expecting somebody to trample on us. We're expecting someone to trample on our dreams. We expect people to be against us. We expect God to be against us. Is anybody other than me know what this feels like? Because when I get in a deep enough, dark enough place, then immediately where I go is, the world is against me. God is against me. Everybody is against me. Everybody's conspiring against me. I don't mean that like in a narcissistic way, like everybody's thinking about me, but it's just a sense like, oh, well, yeah, just like everybody's against me. And all of a sudden, there's this narrative there that the whole world is against me. And all of a sudden, like, you've just made up your mind. The world is against me. God is against me. So that even when Jesus himself is walking on the water to come and rescue these disciples, the disciples who have seen and known and walked with Jesus intimately all this time don't have the discernment to recognize Jesus for who he is, because they're operating out of this place of fear. They're operating out of this place of fright. And I'm just wondering, even right where you are right now, if there's not a way in which God might be sending rescue. God might be sending redemption. But at this point, there's a trauma response that happens to where even when God sends a friend, when God sends an opportunity, when God sends a manifestation of God's love, when God sends blessing, when God is sending a raft of some sort, God sends a raft and you see a battleship. Man, I'm liking this right now. God sends a raft, you see a battleship, right? Jesus comes walking on the water, you see a monster. You read a text, and actually what's there is a God of love. But the way you read it, the way we see it, is a threat. God is speaking a word of love, and we read it as, here's a God with a gun to our head, because our perception's so off. That's what happens when you've been in the pit long enough. That's what happens when you've been at sea and you've been experiencing the storm long enough. Our perception gets so rattled, it gets so off, that we can't trust our own senses anymore. So here is, I've gone about this long enough, here is just a gentle invitation this morning, that what if in fact that form, that shapeless form that's coming on the water, that you don't exactly recognize, what if it's not a monster? What if whatever it is that's coming is not out to kill you? What if just because, and I know you've been burned before, but what if there's an invitation to actually see God by the Spirit at work in these things? What if God actually is moving? And I know it takes faith to see that, and I know that there's risk involved, and I know, again, especially when people have assumed the worst about you, but what if there's a way that God is actually moving? What if this could be Jesus walking on this water? I don't even know what that looks like for you right now, but I just feel like somebody needs to hear that this morning, that what might be perceived as threat, that might be perceived as harm, what if God's at work in this way? Because I can tell you that when I'm at my darkest, my lowest, my worst, that even God's direct initiative, I perceive as some kind of threat. I don't even want God to get at me. It's like, I just had this memory, I haven't thought it in so long, of when I was like, I don't know, probably 8 years old, and I they had strep throat, and I came in and they were trying to do like the little strep culture where they swab the back of your throat, and I have a real severe gag reflex, and like instinctively, and I remember the doctor being very perplexed with this because I was a nice kid, but like he has the little thing to put your tongue back, and like I grabbed his hands and like wrestled him away, you know, because it was just a reflex. I mean the doctor's just trying to help me, but my sense in that moment is like, you know, you're trying to invade me in a very personal way right now, and that's just my reflexive like instinct. I just wonder if there's some way that you might be doing that with some invitation of the Spirit in this moment, and there might be just like, hey, some way that Jesus is saying, it's I, it's not a good, don't be afraid. What God says in almost every time that there's an encounter between God and a human, it is I, don't be afraid. Those little words, do not be afraid. That's the word I want to give to somebody this morning.
Thank you for joining us today on the Zeitcast with Jonathan Martin. The Zeitcast is brought to you by the generosity of our patrons. If you are enjoying this podcast, consider rating it, writing a review, or sharing with a friend. We couldn't do this without you. To learn more about Jonathan and to support this podcast, visit jonathanmartinwords.com. We would love to hear from you.